The Murder on the Links, Agatha Christie, Chapter 19. I use my gray cells. I was dumbfounded. Up to the last, I'd not been able to bring myself to believe Jack Renault guilty. I had expected a ringing proclamation of his innocence when Poirot challenged him, but now, watching him as he stood, white and limp against the wall, and hearing the damning admission fall from his lips, I doubted no longer. But Poirot had turned to Giraud. "What are your grounds for arresting him?" "Do you expect me to give them to you?" "As a matter of courtesy, yes." Giraud looked at him doubtfully. He was torn between a desire to refuse rudely and the pleasure of triumphing over his adversary. "You think I've made a mistake, I suppose," he sneered. "It would not surprise me," replied Poirot with a soupçon of malice. Giraud's face took on a deeper tinge of red. "Eh bien, come in here. You shall judge for yourself." He flung open the door of the salon, and we passed in, leaving Jack Renault in the care of the two other men. "Now, Monsieur Poirot," said Giraud, laying his hat on the table and speaking with the utmost sarcasm, "I will treat you to a little lecture on detective work. I will show you how we moderns work." "Bien," said Poirot, composing himself to listen. "I will show you how admirably the old guard can listen." And he leaned back and closed his eyes, opening them for a moment to remark, "Do not fear that I shall sleep. I will attend most carefully." "Of course," began Giraud, "I soon saw through all that Chilean tomfoolery. Two men were in it, but they were not mysterious foreigners. All that was a blind." "Very creditable so far, my dear Giraud," murmured Poirot, "especially after that clever trick of theirs with the match and cigarette end." Giraud glared, but continued. "A man must have been connected with the case in order to dig the grave. There's no man who actually benefits by the crime, but there was a man who thought he would benefit. I heard of Jack Renault's quarrel with his father and of the threats that he had used. The motive was established. Now, as to means, Jack Renault was in Merlinville that night. He concealed the fact, which turned suspicion into certainty. Then we found a second victim, stabbed with the same dagger. We know when that dagger was stolen. Captain Hastings here can fix the time. Jack Renault, arriving from Cherbourg, was the only person who could have taken it. I have accounted for all the other members of the household." Poirot interrupted. "You are wrong. There is one other person who could have taken the dagger. You refer to Monsieur Stonor. He arrived at the front door in an automobile which had brought him straight from Calais. Ah, believe me, I have looked into everything. Monsieur Jacques Renault arrived by train. An hour elapsed between his arrival and the moment he presented himself at the house. Without doubt, he saw Captain Hastings and his companion leave the shed, slipped in himself and took the dagger, stabbed his accomplice in the shed, who was already dead." Giraud shrugged his shoulders. "Possibly he did not observe that. He may have judged him to be sleeping. Without doubt, they had a rendezvous. In any case, he knew this apparent second murder would greatly complicate the case. It did." "But it could not deceive Monsieur Giraud," murmured Poirot. "You mock yourself at me, but I will give you one last irrefutable proof. Madame Renault's story was false, a fabrication from beginning to end. We believe Madame Renault to have loved her husband, yet she lied to shield his murderer. For whom will a woman lie? Sometimes for herself, usually for the man she loves, always for her children. That is the last, the irrefutable proof. You cannot get round it. Giraud paused, flushed and triumphant. Poirot regarded him steadily. That is my case, said Giraud. What have you to say to it? Only that there is one thing you have failed to take into account. What's that? Jack Renault was presumably acquainted with the planning out of the golf course. He knew that the body would be discovered almost at once when they started to dig the bunker. Giraud laughed out loud. But it is idiotic what you say there. He wanted the body to be found. Until it was found, he could not presume death and would have been unable to enter into his inheritance. I saw a quick flash of green in Poirot's eyes as he rose to his feet. Then why bury it? He asked softly. Reflect, Giraud. Since it was to Jack Renault's advantage that the body should be found without delay, why dig a grave at all? Giraud did not reply. The question found him unprepared. He shrugged his shoulders as though to intimate that it was of no importance. Poirot moved towards the door. I followed him. There's one more thing that you have failed to take into account, he said over his shoulder. What is that? The piece of lead piping, said Poirot, and left the room. Jack Renault still stood in the hall, with a white, dumb face, but as we came out of the salon, he looked up sharply. At the same moment, there was the sound of a footfall on the staircase. Mrs. Renault was descending it. At the sight of her son, standing between the two myrmidons of the law, she stopped as though petrified. Jack? She faltered. Jack, what is this? He looked up at her, his face set. They have arrested me, mother. What? She uttered a piercing cry, and before anyone could get to her, swayed and fell heavily. We both ran to her and lifted her up. In a minute, Poirot stood up again. She's cut her head badly, on the corner of the stairs. I fancy there's a slight concussion also. If Giraud wants a statement from her, he'll have to wait. She'll probably be unconscious for at least a week. Denise and Françoise had run to their mistress, and leaving her in their charge, Poirot left the house. He walked with his head bent down, frowning thoughtfully at the ground. For some time, I didn't speak, but at last I ventured to put a question to him. Do you believe, then, in spite of all appearances to the contrary, that Jack Renault may not be guilty? Poirot didn't answer me at once, but after a long wait, he said gravely, I do not know, Hastings. There is just a chance of it. Of course, Giraud is all wrong, wrong from beginning to end. If Jack Renault is guilty, it is in spite of Giraud's arguments, not because of them. And the gravest indictment against him is known only to me. What is that? I asked, impressed. If you would use your gray cells and see the whole case clearly as I do, you too would perceive it, my friend. This was what I called one of Poirot's irritating answers. He went on without waiting for me to speak. Let us walk this way to the sea. We will sit on that little mound there, overlooking the beach, and review the case. You shall know all that I know, but I would prefer that you should come at the truth by your own efforts, not by me leading you by the hand. We established ourselves on the grassy knoll, as Poirot had suggested, looking out to sea. From farther along the sand, the cries of the bathers reached us faintly. The sea was of the palest blue, and the halcyon calm reminded me of the day we'd arrived at Merlinville, my own good spirits, and Poirot's suggestion that I was fey. What a long time seemed to have elapsed since then. And in reality, it was only 3 days. Think, my friend, said Poirot's voice encouragingly. Arrange your ideas. Be methodical. Be orderly. There is the secret of success. I endeavored to obey him, casting my mind back over all the details of the case, and reluctantly it seemed to me that the only clear and possible solution was that of Giraud, which Poirot despised. I reflected anew. If there was daylight anywhere, it was in the direction of Madame d'Aubreuil. Giraud was ignorant of her connection with the Baroldi case. Poirot had declared the Baroldi case to be all-important. It was there I must seek. I was on the right track now, and suddenly I started as an idea of bewildering luminosity shot into my brain. Trembling, I built up my hypothesis. You have a little idea, I see, mon ami. Capital! We progress. I sat up and lit a pipe. Poirot, I said, it seems to me we've been strangely remiss. I say we, although I dare say I would be nearer the mark. But you must pay the penalty of your determined secrecy. So I say again, we have been strangely remiss. There is someone we've forgotten. And who is that? Inquired Poirot with twinkling eyes. Georges Conneau.